We're here with Robert Tate, and he's just returned from Cairo, where he was detained by police because he was a foreign journalist. Why don't you start by telling us about your experience?
Where to begin? We were stopped by a police checkpoint roughly half an hour after leaving Cairo airport, around about Friday midday. They asked to check our passports. My colleague and I both held British passports, and they then asked to see inside my bag. When they did so, they found a satellite phone, which confirmed the suspicions that we were journalists, and journalists are plainly the eye of the storm, this particular scenario in Egypt, foreign journalists, that is. They then asked us to follow them in a vehicle they had in front, and we followed them to a nearby police station. That was followed by a wait of perhaps an hour or longer before we were taken to another facility, to which I guess belonged to the Egyptian intelligence service, the Mukhabarat. Thereafter, we were held incommunicado for roughly 27 hours with blindfolds, handcuffs, and in a cell where other Egyptian detainees were being beaten and tortured with either cattle prods or electrocuting devices, I'm not sure which.
Do you have any idea how many people were in that cell with you? And did you have any chance, or did your colleague have any chance to communicate to find out if these were Egyptian journalists, human rights activists, or protesters that had been detained?
I guessed that there were about five other people, or possibly four, in the cell with me. I don't know who they were, because we'd all been told, and I was told in English, no speak, don't speak under any circumstances. They were told the same thing in Arabic. At one point, after a lot of discreet manipulation, I was able to adjust my blindfold so I could see pretty much half of the room, and in my line of vision were three men. At least two of them looked plainly Egyptian to me. The third one could have been a Westerner, could have been, but I had no way of finding out. And the two people I saw closest to me both had beards, and they were doing Islamic prayer at one point, and they looked to me as if they could have been political Islamists, possibly Muslim Brotherhood.
You've written that you had read accounts, historic accounts, of torture in Nazi Germany and Stalin's Russia, in Pinochet's Chile, in Argentina and in Iran. How do you equate the personal experience that you've gone through to the accounts that you've read?
Well, the first thing that has to be said is I wasn't tortured, so it was much easier for me. It's very hard to rationalize the reality that I have now been in a sort of physical environment that equates to those places that I have read about. When you're undergoing something physically yourself, you don't really intellectualize it at that point. But no, when I read about these things much earlier in my life, I suppose years ago, it just sounded absolutely horrifying. It seemed unimaginable that anyone could be kept in these circumstances and then could then live a normal life thereafter. But no, I've been there, and here I am, and I presume that the rest of my life is expected to be normal.
You said that you weren't tortured, but some may beg to differ that being detained blindfolded and forced to lie on the floor while people immediately next to you were being tortured is a form of mental torture. Did you feel at some point that you may be next?
I had mixed feelings about it. I did wonder if I would be next. I rather assumed, because I know the Middle East and the sort of rather strange rules of the game that apply there, that I wouldn't be next because I'm a Westerner and I hold a British passport, and therefore I was sort of subject to favourable treatment. But you can't rely on that. You don't know the psychological makeup of the people who are in charge of you, who are controlling you, who really have your destiny at their mercy. It's a thin line, it's an invisible line. I mean, I wasn't physically tortured in the sense that my co-inmates were, but I was roughly treated. I was pushed up against a wall, shouted at, and it could easily have come my way. And the events that I would describe were taking place a few feet away from where I lay. There was a sound of these click, click, clicking electric rods, which were really just inches away from my face, and you never knew. You just never knew if it was going to come your way. I always felt it wasn't going to come my way, but that didn't make me any less nervous.
Do you think this experience has given you insight into the Egyptian regime?
It's hard to say if anyone can obtain any insight with a blindfolded, but it certainly gives me a clue as to why people are out on the streets. It's about dignity. It's about respect. It's about having rights, human rights. I think these things have triggered this mass revolt against the government of Hosni Mubarak. And I don't think what I witnessed is peculiar to the last 2 weeks. I think this has been going on for the past 30 years. This is the way the Egyptian security services, the Mukhabirat, operate. It was obvious it was a well-oiled machine, that these guys were well-practiced and well-rehearsed at what they were doing. They were simply doing what they always do, writ large.
Omar Suleiman, the vice president of Egypt that was appointed by Mubarak, is the man who had headed intelligence agencies and was responsible in his portfolio for the prison system. What are your thoughts about the idea that he is being proposed as a man to handle a democratic transition in a post-Mubarak scenario?
Good luck to those negotiating with him. Clearly, he is the head of a huge apparatus. He's not, one presumes, personally ordering all these deeds to be carried out, but there'd be no question that he knows about them, that he sanctions them by proxy or tacitly. In my judgment, this is not a man you would want to go to as a first port of call to build up a new form of society with democratic institutions, because the institution that I was in clearly is the antithesis of democracy, as we understand it.
Let's talk about your feelings coming out of it. Are you having some feelings of black rage?
Well, I was in the first 24 to 36 hours. Some of that, to be honest, may have been induced by sleep deprivation, because I hadn't slept since Wednesday night, Thursday morning. And yes, I mean, when you're in that situation, you're not in control of your own destiny. You're not sleeping. Something has happened to you very suddenly and it's a huge shock. And then, yes, of course, you get angry. It didn't happen to me immediately. I only began to get angry after a period of time in captivity. That increased after I was released from the detention centre. And it was a relative release. We were taken to an internment facility at the airport and kept there for 16 hours. And that's when I get really angry. I realised just the full magnitude of what we'd been subjected to for having done nothing wrong. I mean, we hadn't done anything. We hadn't even spoken to any Egyptians. You know, we hadn't committed any crime by anyone's measurements, not even under Egyptian law. Yeah, these things would make a person angry. I wouldn't want to go any further than that. I wouldn't say that it's had a permanent mark on me that's going to last the rest of my life. But then, who knows?